and welcome to the radio version of DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. At our microphones today is Paul Quander. Paul is the director of the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. And Paul, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Len.
Paul, you basically run the Parole and Probation Agency for the District of Columbia, but you're a federal agency. We are a federal agency. You were appointed by the president. We are an executive branch agency. There's a lot of confusion because it's so easy to say you run parole and probation, but we're so much more than that in terms of high technology, some of the best information systems going, some of the lowest caseloads in the country, drug treatment, mental health treatment. There's a whole mess of things, for lack of a better word, that you have within your agency that most parole and probation agencies don't have, correct or incorrect?
Well, let me first start by saying I am the director of the agency. I am one of many individuals who are dedicated to performing public safety here in the community for men and women who are involved in the criminal justice system. And you are correct. We are a relatively new executive level agency, a part of the federal government, and we're an independent federal agency, which means that we have the ability to be creative, to try new approaches, to implement research-based practices, and we've done that. So we have some of the better and more of the state-of-the-art programming and opportunities that we can offer to the men and women who we encounter. As a result of that, we're able to provide services for those individuals, and at the same time, we are providing services to the men and women of the District of Columbia because we're making the city safer and the streets safer as well.
All right, so we're responsible for probation. We're responsible for people coming out of prison.
That is correct. Whether they are coming out of prison, if they're on parole, or if they're under supervised release, if they're under probation, we have responsibility for them. So anyone who has been convicted of a crime in the Superior Court of the District of Columbia and either incarcerated or placed straight on probation or a deferred sentence or a civil protection order, we have responsibility for their supervision and for their reintegration back into our society and to help them with some of those skill sets that may be deficient. Because as we help individuals with their own individual skill sets, whether it's in education, employment, substance abuse, mental health issues, the more we help them, the more we help our community as a whole, and the safer our community becomes.
Right, but essentially we are a twofold operation. We have very strict supervision. We have very strict accountability for the offender population from the standpoint of very low caseloads compared our caseloads to national averages, from the amount of drug testing we do, from the amount of partnerships we have with the Metropolitan Police Department, the fact that our people ride together with folks within the Metropolitan Police Department and go visit offenders' homes. It's that sort of very strict accountability plus the services. And we have probably more services than the vast majority of parole and probation agencies in this country.
We're very fortunate in that we do have a number of services, and we're very fortunate in that accountability is a mainstay of what it is that we do. And in order to get the accountability to where we wanted it, we had to reduce the caseload. When we initially started this agency, the individual caseload for the parole and probation officers, we call them here in the District of Columbia community supervision officers, with the emphasis on community supervision, is that it was in excess of 100 to 1. In our general supervision units, it's down to 50 to 1. And in some of our specialized units, it ranges from 25 to 35 to 1. That allows us to spend more time with individual offenders. It allows us to get to know them better. It allows us to monitor and find out what the needs are. And it allows us to be more vigilant so that we can identify problems early on. And in many instances, we can correct them or take action to prevent a person from going or falling completely down that slippery slope.
Well, let's talk about some of those special services because they are extraordinary. Now, we do have many of articles that are on our website, www.csosa.gov. That really talk about the individual operations, but you know, to address them, and stop me whenever you want to address a particular one. We have a mental health caseload. We have a high-risk offender caseload in terms of substance abuse. Go ahead.
That's right. A lot of people don't understand or don't realize is that a number of the individuals involved in the criminal justice system have mental health issues. Some of them are not diagnosed, but you get this outward and this acting out type of behavior. So what we've done is we have divided and strategically positioned ourselves by assigning individuals to specific caseloads. So we have a mental health team where we have CSOs, community supervision officers, who have an interest and who have received special training in the area of mental health supervision. It's connected to the District of Columbia Department of Mental Health. And so we can provide services. And there's some special techniques and there's a special patience that you have to have when you're dealing with individuals who have mm-hmm. some of the mental health issues. But a large percentage of the individuals who are involved in the criminal justice system have mental health issues. A lot of them have been misdiagnosed or not diagnosed at all. We're getting into them. And so as a result, we are able to put into place a structure. We get them treatment, and we are able to hopefully manage and move them along with their mental health issues as well as dealing with the criminal justice. And what we found out is if we can deal with the mental health issues, and if a person needs medication, making sure they get the medication, making sure they get that they're placed into the support network that is already available in the District of Columbia, that person stands a much greater chance of successfully completing his or her supervision. And that's what everyone in the community wants.
Well, recent Department of Justice research suggests that it is over 50% having a history of mental health problems. Not a diagnosable mental health condition, but having a history of mental health problems. And the figure is much higher for female offenders.
Absolutely. And when you have higher caseloads, you don't have time sometimes to go into that. But because we're in a position where our caseloads are manageable, they're not ideal, but they are manageable, we can go into it. And we have a state-of-the-art tool. We have a screening tool. We call it our auto screener, which allows us to assess an individual's needs, assess the likelihood of future criminal activities, and also will give us a prescriptive plan for what that individual needs, what services that individual needs, so that we not only know what the risks are, we know what that individual's needs are.
And so, that's a good segue in terms of technology, because along with the auto screener, we have SMART, which is the department's overall tracking system, which again is state of the art. It's shared with all members of the criminal justice community. It allows us to seamlessly move information, all information, from one a community supervision officer to another, or to work with MPD in terms of their request for information. You have a state-of-the-art information system.
It is, and it allows us to, I think, become very efficient. And let me give you an example. I mentioned some of the teams that we have, and there's a mental health team, there's a heightened substance abuse team, there's a sex offense team, there are general supervision teams, there's a traffic and alcohol prevention team. And from time to time, you may have team members who will assist an individual in speaking to or helping on an individual caseload. There have been occasions where our officers have been out on the street doing accountability tours, going and visiting the offenders in their homes.
With the police department.
With the police department. And, for example, I may have someone on my caseload and I'm going to see that person, but I happen to see someone on your caseload. With our technology and with our smart system and with the mobile capability that we have, our officers are out there with their mobile laptop computers. They can actually pull up the individual's caseload. They can go into it and find out when that individual offender was in the office, when his next appointment was.
The pre-sentence investigation
report. They can pull all that information right there on the street. So it allows us to be in the community. It allows us to have access to all the relevant information at anyone's fingertips. It just allows us to be efficient. And in doing that, we can provide the services that help not only the offenders, but helps the District of Columbia and public
safety. Well, that's one of the things that you mentioned before, Paul, in terms of the term community supervision officer. To be a community supervision officer, the concept of naming parole and probation officers or agents that give them that moniker designates the sense that they need to be out in the community, out with the offender, where he's employed, in his home, with the Metropolitan Police Department, with treatment providers, to get him out of the office, him or her out of the office and into the community.
Absolutely. When this agency was created, one of the mainstays was that we needed to practice what we preached. If we were going to be about community, we needed to divest ourselves from a centralized location. Prior to the offices coming into existence as CSOSA, probation and parole basically were located downtown in the center of the city. But what we decided to do is, if we're going to be effective and if we want to have the impact of the community, if we want the community to assist us and to know what we're doing, we needed to be out there. So we have 6 field sites located throughout the District of Columbia, in Northwest, in Northeast, in Southeast, across the district, so that we can be present where not only our offenders are, but where the larger community is.
Right.
We changed the name so that it's not just a parole or probation supervision. It's about community supervision. We want to do things in concert with the community because we don't live in a vacuum, and we don't want to supervise in a vacuum. We want to supervise our offenders in concert with what the community wants. What are the community standards? What is the community asking from us? And we want to be responsive to our community.
And we have 5 full-time individuals. Now, this is beyond the fact that you and other senior staff are constantly out there talking to the community organizations and talking to the neighborhood groups. But we have 6 full-time people whose jobs are to go to every meeting in the District of Columbia that has crime as a theme, or as public safety as a theme.
Absolutely. We have community relations specialists who are out there in the community, who even more so than the community supervision officers. And these are individuals who are representing this agency to not only talk about what it is that we do, but to find out from the community what we could be doing more of.
Okay.
And so we want to be a full partner with the community. So we want to know all the nuances. We want to know what's working, what's not working. We want to know how we can partner better with the Metropolitan Police Department, how we can partner better with religious organizations. How can we partner better with community organizations? Because in this country, politics and resources start at the lowest level.
Sure.
We want to know what's going on in the communities, in the ANCs, in the wards. And the only way for us to do that is to be an active member, to go out and to talk and to be visible so that people know who we are so that we can be responsive.
And it segues very nicely in terms of our faith-based effort. We have about 40 churches, mosques, synagogues throughout the city. We have hundreds of volunteers who work with individuals as they're coming out of the prison system. That's a pretty impressive record. In fact, we seem to have hit a spike recently in terms of interest, in terms of various church groups coming on, bringing on new members. So the faith-based outreach, again, which is part of our overall community outreach, seems to be continuing and seems to be prospering.
Absolutely. The churches and the religious organizations have just been fantastic. We wanted to reach out to the community, and we decided that we should go with what's already out there. And what has already been established are the churches. There are churches that have been doing this work for years and years. There are churches that have prison ministries, clothing ministries, education ministries, job enhancement and job placement ministries. So what we did was we tapped into that resource that was already there. This community has a long history of tremendous involvement by the churches. So we put a call out to the faith community and said, come partner with us. We have men and women who are returning home from prison who need help, who mm-hmm. need assistance, mm-hmm. who need mentoring, who need a helping hand. And those churches and the members of the church not only talk the talk, but they've been walking the walk. They've actually come in, given a person a hand in a systematic manner, and that program has blossomed, and it's something that is really significant because it's easy to talk about it, but these churches have really put their arms, their shoulders, their good heart, and their good work, and it's paying tremendous dividends.
I find that from time to time a mother will call, and in many cases, they're part of the Islamic religion, and there is this one mosque. All you have to do is refer that particular person who is under our supervision or maybe not under our supervision to them, and they immediately take care of them. So is that really seems to be quite an impressive coalition.
It is, and we're up, we're operational, and it's beginning to take on a life of its own because, as I said, what we've done is just tapped into organizations. These faith-based organizations have always done this work. We've just asked them to look at our population, this population, and to help us. And when we've done that, they've agreed. They've opened their doors to the mosque, to the churches, and it has been fantastic. It also allows for us in the supervision business to have another set of eyes and ears and a heart that will help these men and women who need sometimes a different ear, who need a different shoulder, who need a different hand to push them or guide them along, other than someone who may be considered just law enforcement. So when you have someone from the outside, from that religious community, whispering in the left ear, basically what has been whispered in the right ear to move forward, to leave that bad lifestyle away, to reconnect with your family, that your children need you, that your parents who are getting older and your grandparents, they need you out here. It gives people a reason to stay in this community. Mm-hmm. It gives people a reason to say, no, I can't go with you because I need to stay here. It gives people a reason to be pro-social in this environment.
Now, one of the things also as well we need to talk about is the treatment program, the treatment component. You have what we refer to as vote units, where essentially there are places throughout the city, four locations throughout the city, where individuals can go and get an assessment in terms of their education, in terms of their job, their potential for jobs. We will find them jobs. We will work with DC government in terms of finding them opportunities.
Well, actually, it's even more than that. We are staffed. And we have staff that are with our agency who are vocational development specialists. We have we have a learning lab in a number of our field sites where we actually provide educational services and general equivalency diploma, GED, preparation and classes so that individuals who are on supervision don't necessarily have to go to a District of Columbia facility. They can come in-house. And we thought that was important because we need to help the men and women who are under supervision reach a certain educational level so that they can avail themselves of some of the jobs that are out here. We can have all the jobs just waiting. But if we don't have offenders who are prepared to accept those jobs and to excel in those jobs, then we're missing a significant portion. So we have been funded for that. We have a vocational opportunities and training and education employment program that is up and operational. We have an educational program where we have learning laboratories in four of our facilities. And we work with men and women day in and day out. Again, if you're going to compete in this society, you have to have the basic education. And we need to get many of our men and women up to a certain level so that they can get those jobs and then compete for promotions later on down the line.
And there's a variety of Department of Justice research that says just that. It's just not a matter of supervision. It has to be that combination of supervision and treatment services. I sort of go back to the mental health caseload. Does anybody really expect a person with a mental health issue to do well without treatment? So it's just not about supervision. It's just not about accountability. It's got to be the combination of supervision and accountability and services.
Right. One of the things that people often think is that you can just supervise, you can watch individuals like a hawk, and that's all you need to do. Unfortunately, our society has been very good at locking people up. But the issue is when you lock people up, they're coming home.
Right.
And when they come home, are they prepared to do anything differently that will keep them in the community?
But that philosophy has also proved to be difficult. Again, Department of Justice research states that it increases recidivism. It doesn't decrease recidivism.
It increases recidivism. It is extremely costly and counterproductive to a society. I would much rather supervise an individual, provide that individual with the treatment that he or she needs, monitor, support, encourage. But at the same time, I have to watch and make sure that there is no risk to public safety. That way, I am treating the entire person. And as a society, I think we are better served when we do that.
And that's the combination because we do satellite monitoring, GPS tracking. We do lie detector tests for sex offenders. We'll follow them at night if necessary. So we have a very strong watching component. We have a very strong, probably one of the stronger accountability components in the country, but coupled with some of the best services in the country at the same time. And I think that's what makes ESOSA unique.
And I think that's where we're getting the best bang for the dollar. When you start the analysis, and if you start and stop the analysis just with accountability, then it's not a complete project. You have to continue that analysis on. You need accountability, you need treatment, you need monitoring, you need to revisit, and then you will have a structure that I think gets you the best bang for the resources, and you get an individual who is more likely to participate in pro-social activities as opposed to tearing down our society.
Paul, a couple minutes left. Anything from a philosophical sense? I think you just summed it up right there in terms of that combination of accountability and also at the same time the provision of treatment. You just reopened the Reentry and Sanctions Center, which is amazing. Again, I don't know of a parole and probation entity in this country that has its own hospital wing devoted to drug assessment and drug treatment. They come out under extraordinarily tough supervision and at the same time continued treatment in the community or in continued in-house treatment. That's an amazing component.
Well, let me talk about that just for a moment. What the research has shown, in particular here in the District of Columbia, is that they're a core group of about 30% offenders who are long-term criminals who have, on average, 9 prior arrests, 6 prior convictions, a documented chronic history of substance abuse. And what happens is they're arrested, they're convicted, they go in, they come out, they're arrested, they're convicted, they go in, constantly. They come out, constantly. And what we decided to do was to try to break that cycle. We know they have criminality issues. We know they have substance abuse issues. Why not take a look at what makes them tick? Do a detailed assessment. Figure out what's going on in that individual. Why does he or she need to have this type of conduct in their lives? Once we get that assessment done, then we know what's going on. Then we can identify an appropriate substance abuse treatment program because substance abuse drives many of the criminal acts that follow. So if we can assess, then place an individual in a specifically designed treatment program for that individual, we will see a tremendous result. We've had this pilot up for a number of years.
35% reduction in arrest.
The University of Maryland did a study of it. It is a quality program. It works, and we wanted to replicate it and to build it out. So now, once we are fully operational, and we started in February of this year, but as we continue to bring the program on, we will reach approximately 1,200 individuals every year into the program. So it's something that we're very proud of.
And it's something I think that the entire country is going to take a look at. National Public Radio took a look at. CBS Evening News took a look at. In fact, CSOSA is just not about what's happening in the District of Columbia. CSOSA seems to be getting an awful lot of publicity throughout the country. Again, national news media constantly being written up in national criminal justice publications. It seems to me that CSOSA is far more than just the District of Columbia, that you're setting sort of an example for what's supposed to happen throughout the country.
Well, we have some advantages. We have some resources that Congress has given us, and many states who are dealing with some of the same issues that we are dealing with have not been as fortunate. They don't have the resources that we have been provided. So what we try to do is we try to put into place programs that work. Once they're established here, then we share them with other agencies throughout the country. You spoke earlier about our information system, the SMART system. That's something that is in place that can be replicated throughout the country. We spoke earlier about our assessment tool, the auto screener that is an assessment and a needs tool. That is available to members of our community throughout the country. So as we progress and as we are doing things and we're getting the research that supports the success of these programs and initiatives, others throughout the country can use them as well and just piggyback on it, and they can refine it and customize it to their particular jurisdictions. But the groundwork has been laid. They can cut and paste and get the programs up in their own jurisdiction, which is a wonderful thing for us.
And you've been listening to Paul Quander, the director of the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. Our website is www.csosa.gov, www.csosa.gov. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the radio version of DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. Have yourself a very pleasant day.